We're recording.
We're recording? Okay, thank you for being here. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Matthew Reed in case number 2261. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Reed, please come forward and introduce yourself and your attorney.
I'm Dr. Matthew Reed, David Stoll appearing as legal counsel for Dr. Reed.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Reed, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censoring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We have no additional materials.
Okay, thank you. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then Dr. Reed, you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Okay, and let's see. Dr. Thompson, you are the lead on this. Could you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Sure. So on October 19th, 2021, Echo, a six-year-old female Shih Tzu, was presented to the respondent to have a cyst near the dog's tail evaluated. Respondent shaved the area. The cyst was ruptured, therefore he recommended sedated removal of the cyst that day. The dog was sedated and the cyst was removed. While placing the dog into recovery kennel, respondent was unable to auscult a heartbeat. CPR was initiated but was unsuccessful. Complainant was notified and the dog's remains were sent to Midwestern University for an autopsy.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Reed, at this time, I would like to swear you in. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Dr. Reed and your counsel, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
As you've just heard, the presenting complaint for Echo was something straightforward, a cyst evaluation. Clearly, no one could have predicted the unexpected outcome in this case. I remain steadfast that veterinary care provided in this case did not cause or contribute to the outcome, did not fall below the standard of care. Medically, everything I did was appropriate. On presentation, I shaved and evaluated the cyst. During my evaluation, I discovered the cyst had ruptured and therefore recommended to have it removed. I am well aware of the risks associated with brachycephalic breed, such as Shih Tzu's like Echo. I therefore carefully reviewed Echo's chart, saw no history of respiratory crisis, distress, nor gastroesophageal reflux, and she was not tachypnic during the physical exam. As a result, I believe it would be best to perform the cyst removal under sedation rather than subject Echo to a potentially unnecessary anesthetic procedure. My assistant, Karen Navarez, went over the forms with the owner, and she is the one who witnessed the owner sign all of the consent forms that are time-stamped in the medical record. We have not only submitted a statement from Ms. Navarez with regard to witnessing the owner's signatures on all these forms, but she is also here to testify under oath if you have any questions for her. As I went into the procedure, I reviewed the sedation consent form, which indicated an IV catheter, blood work, and fluids had been offered prior to this procedure and had been declined by the owner. I had no reason to question that the IV catheter had been declined by the owner, and therefore failed to see how it could be considered negligent for not placing a catheter, and placing it would have gone against the authorization form the client has signed. I performed the cyst removal procedure according to the sedation consent form that was given to me. Also, it is important for you to know that the sedation consent form was finalized prior to the start of the procedure and cannot be altered thereafter. Specifically, the template is opened by staff, in this case, Ms. Navarez, and once the signature is made by the client, the form is finalized and cannot be changed or altered. The sedation procedure was performed without complications and the cyst was successfully removed. Medically, I did everything correctly in accordance with the consent form. Unfortunately, the the patient arrested while being moved into the recovery area, and CPR was immediately initiated, but was unsuccessful. After echo had passed, I offered and encouraged the owners to have an independent necropsy performed, and as can sometimes happen, the necropsy was inconclusive as to a cause of death, and so we still don't know why echo arrested after the procedure. In any event, I don't feel that she passed away due to any substandard care that I provided. Again, I performed the cyst removal appropriately, successfully, and according to the consent form that was provided to me by the owner. I'm now available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I would now like to ask any of the board members if they have questions for Dr. Reed.
So I do have a couple of questions. Thank you for summarizing the case. So in this situation, you initially started with Domitor. I'm guessing dextromethorphan. You figured that this was probably going to be a simple procedure.
A quick.
Yes. And then upon doing the procedure, it seemed as though it was a little bit deeper than what you anticipated, and you needed to go and addition some propofol.
I'm sorry, opposite. It wasn't deep enough.
Okay.
Like if the sedation wasn't.
Correct. The cyst was deeper than what.
The cyst was deeper. Correct.
Yes,
correct.
Yes, sorry.
So,
my.
Yeah. So echoes. Sorry. Move around on the surgery table. So we got some propofol to allow a quick way to proceed for be able to proceed with the procedure.
You said that you're familiar with brachycephalix, which we all learn a lot about brachycephalix and the risks. Now, let's flip this around and say echo was a French bulldog or a bulldog that presented to you, and you were putting that dog under some sedation. If you were to have a French bulldog or a bulldog approach, would you use propofol without intubating that dog?
Depends on the French bulldog, I guess I would say. There's a lot of upper respiratory noise or panting excessively in the room, shows sort of more signs of being stressed, then no.
So you're relying more on those outward signs than just knowing that with brachycephalic syndrome there are things that can be present that we don't necessarily always see. So you're comfortable erring on the side of, well, if I don't hear it, then it's not a problem and I will move forward.
Well, that's why I still went lighter on the dose necessarily. That's why we had to do it twice, the propofol, because I did not want, I know we can come up new stick when we administer propofol, and so that's the concern, but I feel like I've learned that it is rate dependent. You quickly administer it, much more likely to happen. I try to go slowly with it and a lighter touch.
And in your general experience, if, again, let's look at a different case. If you had a pet that you were going to be sedating with propofol, would you, in those situations, ensure or push a client to use an IV catheter versus trying to delicately give repeated doses of propofol?
Ideally, yes.
Okay, so in this case, you felt that because the owner already declined, that it wasn't in the pet's best interest to go ahead and place that anyway, even though you know that that drug is a little bit precarious, should it go outside the vein?
Correct, correct. I wanted to do what we agreed upon.
Okay. And while the pet was under, there was no notice of any sort of apnea, given that we had propofol on board, nobody noticed any issues?
No, ma'am. Every vital recording of it, we were breathing the entire time.
Did you have any questions, Dr. Nelson?
Just a couple. When was the dexmetomidine reversed?
During the CPR procedure.
During the CPR, after you brought the dog back?
Correct.
To the exam table. You said that the dog continued to respirate appropriately during the procedure. The quality of the respiration, sometimes we get very shallow breathing, and do you recall whether the respiration was adequate to maintain oxygen in this patient?
Do not recall, but we were sternal, which is the best way to keep those.
Kept them sternal throughout. And on the necropsy report, remarked dramatic stenotic nares in these dog, mm-hmm. in this dog, and had you notated that or made it?
Not on the soap.
Not on the original soap?
Correct.
Okay, but were you aware of it in the procedure, and because the dog wasn't intubated?
Correct.
And if we're not intubated, the respiratory apparatus has to be adequate?
Correct.
Okay, so that's, I think, the only questions I would have.
Do any other board members have any questions for respondent?
I guess I have on the signatures part of it. Apparently there's some forms that were paper and signed, and the other forms that were on a pad.
No, sir. They were all electronically signed.
And that makes a difference. What I'm seeing.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, the two of you may step back. I'd now like to ask the complainant to come forward, Nicholas Mayali.
Just in follow-up, Mr. Lowy, with regard to the electronic pads, I just want to make sure that the board understands that the consent form is opened up by the technician who goes over the options with the owner. She makes the selections based upon what the owner tells her. She shows the owner the pad, and then the owner signs the pad. As soon as the owner signs the pad, that is finalized. It cannot be edited or altered afterwards. So before the procedure was started, all those consent forms were finalized.
Good morning.
Hi, please come forward and if you will both introduce yourself.
Yes, I'm Nicholas Mayali and my wife Karen.
Okay.
Mayali.
All right, Mr. Mayali, I would now like to swear you in. Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay. And then you are the complainant in this case?
Yes.
Okay. We have read the materials that you provided. You may now address the board.
Okay. I hope that everybody had a chance to read the letter that I wrote concerning the signatures. And I'd like to address that. At our last meeting, his lawyer stated, well, you know, everybody just haphazardly signs on that computer pad. As I said in my letter, I've had many experiences in my previous role prior to my leaving my employment as a president international in the U.S. in signing both mergers and acquisitions. I had to sign many documents, both on paper and utilizing a computer pad. My lawyers had instructed me on how to sign to avoid any future problems with the signature accuracy. So that lesson that I was taught remained with me. If you look at the documents that they allege I signed versus the documents concerning the estimates, it's clearly a difference. And I believe the committee recognized that at our meeting. And I'd like to address also the document that they submitted showing my signature alleging that I had proved no blood work and no ID. I realize what I'm about to say is circumstantial, but many cases are proven and judged based purely on circumstantial evidence, and I'd like to address that. First, fact. When we took 3 months before we made this complaint, we did a lot of research. So it wasn't just a haphazard emotional decision. When I requested the documents, they sent me files on my other dog, Portia. I waited 3 weeks approximately, no response. I called Tracy, she called them, and within 2 hours, I had the documents. When I looked at those documents and realized what they had submitted to this board, I realized that it was a forgery. I subsequently requested from them, and they did send me, the documents I had signed based on the estimates, which they didn't send you. I sent those into the board to show that there was a difference. And let me talk about the documents. If you look at what they said, I checked with my signature. The documents have a check mark again saying do not do blood work and do not use an IV. And if you look at those check marks, they're computer check marks, not me. I did not check those. And what else is missing from that document? How many of you have signed legal documents requesting you check off a box? And what else is there? There's a line that says initial this. There is no line on those documents for initial, because the purpose of initializing it is to prove that you saw and you agree with this check mark. It doesn't exist on that document. My lawyers would look at this and say, it's a CYA document based purely on their alleged statement. As I said in the committee, I had a stent put on my heart over 2 years ago. As I was coming out of surgery into recovery, I had an event. And guess what? The IV saved my life. So why in the hell would I ever agree to someone not putting an IV in, regardless if it's a person or a dog, as a safety? What's the protocol for the veterinary? Protocol states put an IV in during surgery and as well during recovery to avoid exactly what happened to Echo. I can only submit that I love when they talk about protocols and avoid the protocol. We talked to many doctors and prior to us filing the complaint, and they all said, one, I would never do a surgery procedure on a dog without blood work and or having an IV. Why in the case, in the hell did he do this? For what reason? We should have just gone with the treatment of antibiotics. That was my decision to go after they said to me, we're gonna have to operate. I should have decided, no, let's do the treatment with antibiotics first. They rely on us for their protection. They rely on us for their security. I failed her. That was my decision. And I have to live with that guilt for the rest of my life. Anyway.
Thank you. Did you wish to speak?
I did, but I can't.
Okay. Well, let me know if you decide you wish to speak. Thank you, and again, we are so sorry for your loss. I would now like to ask any board members if they have any questions for the complainants.
I don't necessarily have any questions, but first I'd like to say how sorry I am for your loss. And two, I would hope that you don't carry that guilt, because at that time, you felt that that was the best option for your dog. And oftentimes, the very big cysts like that, that go very deep, antibiotics won't completely cure it, and surgery is something that is generally curative. So please remove that guilt from you.
I had a question. When you were signing the electronic forms, were you using your finger or were you using a pen?
Using my finger.
Okay.
That I've done many times on legal documents.
Okay. To follow up on the chair's question, was that on all the documents you signed, you used your finger?
Excuse me, you have to speak a little.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I understand.
We're in the same boat.
Yes. Did you use your finger to sign all the documents? Are all your signatures by finger, not pen?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further...
They didn't supply a pen.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. You may both step back. Dr. Reed and counsel, I'd now like to give you an opportunity to provide any additional remarks or ask questions.
Wait. I do have one thing to say.
Okay. Hold on. Can you state your name for the record, and then I do have to swear you in. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Karen Mayali.
Okay. Karen, do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay. Thank you.
This wasn't what I was intentionally going to say. However, I want to just elaborate on what Nick said. And that is, hypothetically, if in fact you all believe that he did sign that document, which apparently he did not, but if you all believe that, why did this doctor go ahead and perform this surgery knowing it was clearly not safe to do without an IV put in to her in case there was something that went wrong? In that case, if he truly believed that those documents were what Nick had wanted, he should have refused to do the surgery. He should have said, I'm sorry, I can't do this because it's not safe for your dog. And that's all I want to say right now.
Okay, thank you. Do any board members have questions? Okay, thank you. I think we may step back. Dr. Reed and Mr. Stoll, you can come forward.
Thank you. This is Ms. Karen Barrett. She would like to address you after being sworn.
Okay, yes. Dr. Navarez, do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
She is not a doctor yet.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
My name is Karen Navarez, and I was a technician at Cerebral Animal Hospital in Grooming, who assisted Dr. Matthew Reed on October 19, 2021, with the ruptured cyst removal he performed on the dog Echo. I have worked at Cerebral for the past 3 years and will continue working until I attend veterinary school this August to fulfill my goal of becoming a licensed veterinarian. I realize that I am under oath, and I want you to know that, as indicated in my statement to you, I have personally went over the sedation authorization form with the owner and witnessed him sign it on the electronic tablet the practice uses. During the years that I have worked at Cerebral, I would never forge a client's signature. I would also never work at any practice that allowed or tolerated employees to forge signatures. As I indicated in my statement, the owner signed the treatment plan and authorization forms on the pen pad in room 3 of our animal hospital. I specifically recall reviewing and discussing the sedation consent form with the owner. I explained that this form grants our doctor permission to perform the sedated procedure. I read the first part of the form to the owner, which offers a pre-anesthetic blood work, advising the owner that this is highly recommended but not a required service. The owner declined the blood work. I then moved on to the sedation portion of the form, which offers the IV catheter and IV fluids. I explained to the owner again that while these services are not required and do involve additional costs, they are highly recommended services that can aid in a smoother sedation process and provide quick access to the vein in case of an emergency. As I discussed each option with the owner, I checked the appropriate box in front of the owner so they could see what I was doing. Then when I was finished, I handed the owner the pen pad for reviewing and signature. This is the way that I've always been trained to complete these forms. Once the owner signed the electronic form, it is finalized and cannot be changed any further. That is exactly what happened in this case, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, do any board members have questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Do you recall when you say that the complainant declined both the pre-op blood work and the IV catheter? Was it just that, do you recall exactly what was said? Was it just no? Was there any explanation or justification given for the declination? Or was it just a no that you heard?
I do not remember any explanation. I remember just a no.
Thank you.
So there was no discussion about, well, what does that cost?
I was not requested any further explanation.
Okay.
So who checked the box?
I check the box after the client gives me their answer.
Okay. And then how many of those all together, start to finish, estimates to the procedures, how many of those screens that had to be checked and signed, how many different ones were there?
There was the sedation consent form, hospitalization consent form, and the treatment plan. Their treatment plan does not have the check marks, just the hospitalization consent form and the sedation consent form.
So three forms all together.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to decide if I have a question. Anybody else have any other questions for Ms. Navarez? Okay. You may step back. Dr. Reed or counsel?
I've got some closing comments, and I'm not here to say that anyone is lying. I honestly, fervently believe that my clients are telling the truth, and I just offer this up as a possible explanation for what happened. I know the complainant has a hearing problem, and he wears a hearing aid, and even today he was showing that he had trouble listening. And the way that this form was filled out, it was verbally explained by the technician. She was the one that marked each one of the boxes, and I think it's entirely possible that the pre-anesthetic blood work and the catheter was offered to the owner, and perhaps he didn't hear correctly and just said no, and that's the way that the form was filled out. But this conspiracy theory that they're advancing is premised on the assumption that it was changed after the fact, after there was this unfortunate outcome, that the forms were then changed. And that wasn't even possible because of the way that the forms were finalized. No one expected an outcome like this with a simple assist removal. But the question that you have to ask is, was any statute or regulation violated by Dr. Reed? Did he do anything that fell below the standard of care? And the answer is no. Medically, Dr. Reed was confronted with a ruptured cyst that needed to be removed. It is a relatively simple procedure that can be done under sedation or anesthesia. We all know the risks of anesthetic procedures with brachial cephalic bleeds. That was appreciated by Dr. Reed. And if a procedure can be done effectively under sedation as opposed to anesthesia, there are certainly less risks associated with sedation procedures with brachial cephalic bleeds. Remember, Dr. Reed was not present when the owner signed the sedation consent forms. He had no reason to question the fact that the owner had declined an IV catheter and fluids. The owner claims that those signatures are markedly different. I've looked through those things 1,000 times, and they are all a little different. I'm no handwriting expert, but to me, that the signatures are substantially similar. And I realize that the two signatures on the estimate are longer, and perhaps those are because he signed in his first and last name, but he appears to use a shorter signature on the sedation forms that are included in the medical record. And again, he's using his finger, not a pen, so there's going to be some inconsistencies. If you look at the signatures on October 19th, 2021, where he declined the IV catheter and pre-anesthetic testing, they are virtually identical to the signatures on a prior sedation consent form from February 12, 2019. Those are in your
packet in the medical records. So he had previously signed a sedation consent form, and those signatures are substantially similar. All of them are short signatures as opposed to the long signatures on the estimates. Also, as we pointed out, those consent forms were finalized prior to the start of the procedure. The practice could not and would not change those after the fact. And really, they have had every incentive to offer the IV catheter and fluids. They would make more money if those were provided. The overwhelming evidence in this case is that they were offered and declined, and that's what's in the medical record that's in front of you. That's what the medical records say, and that was what was witnessed by Karen Navarez, who was here today in person and makes a very credible witness. In closing, I want to remind you that Dr. Reed performed the procedure in accordance with the sedation consent agreement that was provided to him, and it did not include IV fluids or catheter. Therefore, he was not negligent in failing to utilize those. This complaint should be dismissed with no violation. Finally, with regard to the medical records request, the owner did request medical records. They were provided to him electronically. Unbeknownst to us until after the complaint was filed, they only contained the records from one of his two patients. The practice didn't realize at the time that they were sending only one of the patient's records. He didn't contact them until after the complaint was filed. Then, in April, I got an email from Tracy saying that the owner had previously been provided medical records but couldn't open the file attachment. Could you please provide them to them once again? Within an hour, I had electronically provided the medical records to Tracy, and they were mailed, I believe, to the owner as well. And that was done the same day. So there's no record violation for not timely complying with a records keeping request. Both the requests were timely responded to, unfortunately, perhaps due to the inability to open the file, or they were all transmitted. All the records weren't provided initially, but the owner didn't contact us to let us know that we needed to resend until after the complaint was filed. Do you have anything else you wish to add? Thank you. We again ask that this complaint be dismissed.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from board members?
Okay. One that, and our, when we get in the discussion, some others can chime in. This is a cyst on the hind end of the dog.
Correct.
Right? Why not just use a local to cut it down?
I guess that's an option.
Why wouldn't it be a first option?
The dog's still. A local's not going to provide all of the control, I guess, to be able to properly remove it without, you know, the dog still isn't conscious for all of that. And so it can be, I guess, almost more stressful for them to do it that way.
Ms. Solomon, did you have a question?
Yes, I just...
The larger animals.
I wanted to respond to or add to Dr. Stoll, Mr. Stoll's comment. We are a JD, so that is okay. The board is not signature, are not experts in handwriting or signatures. So the board is here to make medical determinations and determinations according to the statutes. So a concern I have is as a layperson, I have learned on serving on the board that there's an increased risk for brachiocephalic dogs to when they undergo anesthesia. And do you, Dr. Reed, standardly put brachiocephalic dogs under anesthesia without IVs and without intubation?
I guess maybe it's a verbiage difference of anesthesia versus sedation.
Okay, I'm a layperson, not medical.
But sedation, yes, depending on the case-by-case basis. There's no blanket blanket standard of care that if you are a specific breed, you automatically sort of this standard of care, I guess. At least something else to me.
And are you aware of any other instances of discrepancies or he said, she said kind of things between the client and you or your staff regarding the automated filling out of those forms? Has there been any past point of confusion?
No, ma'am. The 3 years I've been there,
Okay, so those forms have been in use for about 3 years?
Since I've been there, they've been there longer than I've been there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do any other board members have questions?
I have a question of the complainant. Is it too late to ask a question?
No. Go ahead and have, you two can step
Thank
back
you.
And we'll go ahead and have the complainants come forward again.
Just one quick question for you. When did you receive the necropsy report for Echo?
Approximately 2 weeks after that, I picked it up at the office.
Okay.
And then we read the report, and that's when we started our investigation based on that. I'd like to also make a statement. That is not the woman that was in the room with me during that day. She is not the same person that was there. Thank you. Any other questions?
No, thank you. Anything further? Dr. Reed or Mr. Stoll, did you want to have any follow-up to the comments that were just made, or?
I'll just make a quick comment. There's no way that we would call a witness to testify under oath as to what she witnessed if she was not the actual person that was there. She was. I've appeared here long enough that you should know that.
Thank you. Okay, this can,
And then just to kind of confirm, it was her. If you look on the sedation procedure forms, the tech initials are KN, Karen Navarez, and then even afterwards when we had to add the drugs to the PPL, it is our technician on the case that does that, and you can see noted here on 1022, Karen Navarez completed it. She was my technician.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. Thompson?
So we have a couple of things going on here in this case, right? I think first let's address the medical side of things. The procedure itself doesn't sit well with me. I think when we have a brachycephalic dog, whether an owner decided that they did or didn't want the IV catheter, I think that's something that's our responsibility to know what the overall safety of our patient is. I don't know as if I would have even offered that option to not have that piece. The blood work here or there, I mean, that's one side of it, but I think the IV catheter, it's been drilled in me time and time and time again how you approach a brachycephalic. And I know, like, most of us tend to think bulldog, French bulldog, the real smush-faced guys, but
right.
You know, Shih Tzus are still brachycephalics. There's other breeds that fall in line, and especially with this one being an Imperial Shih Tzu, much smaller, we also know that when we find these supremely smaller animals or versions of breeds, there tends to be other issues that go along with it when we breed down to get these. So I think for me, just the way that this case was approached, using Dextromotor to do a procedure, to Mr. Lamy's comment, you know, why not a local? Like, that would have been a great question. I totally understand I wouldn't have started with that, but should I be doing this procedure on a normal face dog? and I did the dog tour and found that they were still having some feeling, then maybe I would use a local and proceed that way. One, you know, six, one half dozen the other. The propofol induction in two different doses, you know, your question about the stenotic nares, so now we've gone to a drug that we know that induces apnea, breathing issues. We don't have good patent airway in an awake state, let alone a sedative state. You know, when we look at the necropsy report, we talk about seeing the issues inside that correlate with bronchocephalic disease. So, and I think one of the comments that just kind of really didn't resonate well with me is that, you know, Dr. Reed is very confident that this is how he would approach a case and that there wasn't anything looking back that there would be done differently. And while, you know, we talk about standards of care, again, I don't remember a time in the years that I've been practicing that there hasn't been this designation like dogs, brachycephalics. Like, you just do things differently, and you know that. I mean, heck, we weren't even allowed to do a nail trim if they got a little feisty without doing some sort of, you know, because they just, that's what they do. They just stop breathing. So with that, I tend to agree with the recommendations of the investigative committee, but I'm definitely open to hearing any other discussion.
I would agree with your assessment of the medicine here. And I have some problems with this being a brachiocephalic and not having an endotracheal tube. Mm-hmm. That becomes, I think, the paramount thing when you're faced with a patient like this. And I need to do something, although we didn't have to do something right then, is I've got to come up with a plan that includes intubation. The dextromator not being reversed at the end of the procedure, waiting till the dog had problems to reverse that, I also have a problem with that. Like you said, both propofol and the dexmedetomidine are respiratory depressants. You can certainly get the apnea. And even though the doctor said they didn't observe any apnea, I think in the pre-planning you would go propofol, apnea, brachiocephalic. My anesthetic plan needs to be adjusted accordingly. So I focus on the lack of intubation. A procedure should have been developed that included intubation. At the trying to remove it with a local, I've been there. It generally doesn't go well because they move around, and now you got a flailing dog who's a brachiocephalic on the table, and plus the volume you have to put in there, it does influence your surgery. So a local as an adjunct, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Solely, it probably wouldn't work in a lot of cases. Some dogs, yeah, and some masses, you know, your adenoma, little local, zap it off, but this was a deep cyst. So, as far as the signatures, I don't know what to make of that, and I don't know where we're at with that. The only thing I would say, the vast majority of the time that things are declined is because of cost. And we didn't have any discussion of how much is this whole thing going to cost. There was no discussion of that. So if that lends any weight, I don't know if it does.
When I think about the signatures, like going through the entire medical record, there were other times that there were signatures, and they don't all match. And as careful as you are with those machines, sometimes the machines aren't functioning correctly where they don't catch every movement of your finger or what have you. So like I look at those and say, you know, I'm not a handwriting expert anyway either, but you know, there are some differences throughout the history of the patient where the signatures are different. But I don't really feel that that lends to, that's not a part of our decision.
I agree.
Because I see other things are over.
My focus is the medicine, the anesthetic plan. Yeah.
I understand the discussion on the drug choice for a brachiocephalic and the preparation for if there's an event. I don't understand the push on the IV catheter necessarily. Not that I haven't worked with plenty of doctors that refuse to
to do a procedure on a brachiocephalic or other high-risk patients without an IV catheter. However, it seems like stepping a little bit far whenever there are a lot of practices that do make it an option because it is an additional expense. And we've had many conversations over referral right to specialty and you can't do that because that'll make it more expensive for veterinary care, which is already expensive, or requirements on x-rays right for dentals or other additional expenses, because the standard of veterinary care, while the expectation keeps rising, then it becomes cost prohibitive. And so there are many times that people like that for cost reasons, and there isn't a discussion about the cost because it's not our responsibility to x-ray their pockets. Our responsibility is to make the best recommendation and then allow them to make the decision from there. And I do believe the testimony from the technician that appeared that it is strongly recommended, but it is optional. And again, because I've heard that conversation many times, and I don't have a reason to not trust that that conversation happened when it comes to IV catheter or blood work. So I guess I have a hard time with that one being an issue, is because I think that if this doctor is comfortable with that being an option and not a hard and fast no, then it should be. And there's plenty of high volume facilities that do not require any of those things. And that doctor is comfortable with offering that. And so I think that it does have to come down to the doctor's comfort level. And then with the drugs, again, I can understand what you two are saying. But again, you have to trust the veterinarian to use their knowledge. And I don't think he was out of line. I think that it was a really unfortunate outcome that nobody foresaw. And this happens when you're practicing medicine. It's not perfect. It's science. So I have a hard time with the direction it's going. But I think the IV catheter thing I just don't agree with.
Well, in the discussion, listening to the investigative committee, they were harping on the IV catheter. And to me, the endotracheal tube is actually more of my biggest concern.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we put the endotracheal tube in because we're worried about respiratory distress and crushing. Having that IV catheter for a patent way of getting emergency drugs in, because we know that these dogs are more prone to hit the deck if they're going to.
I appreciate what you're saying regarding the IV catheter. I would not have done this procedure in this way without an IV catheter in a trachea tube.
Sure.
But it's not in the practice. It's not standards. We could probably argue a lot whether it should be or not, but it's not. So the catheter, it's unfortunate it wasn't there. Would it have made a difference? Maybe. I don't know. The endotracheal tube is the focus. That's my focus.
Okay. Ms. Sullivan?
Yes. I didn't hear in testimony or read a financial concern. Was that identified somewhere that I was?
No, I'm saying it was addressed that it wasn't discussed, so did it happen? And there's oftentimes it's not mentioned.
But not in this case.
I was just curious.
Yeah, there was just a curiosity, but there was no discussion of that.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Okay. All right, so with that information, well, I guess there's two pieces here to the medical records and whether or not there's a problem with the practice in sending those in a timely manner, given that only one of the text records was sent and not both. That's a difficult. I had a hard time seeing in the medical records where the request was made. Did somebody else find it in there?
I didn't, but also if it's regarding two pets and this is about one particular pet, I was kind of confused if that was something we would even consider on the other.
Well, because they requested the records for this pet, but the other pet's records were sent.
Oh, got it.
So
that's, I don't know. I didn't see it, but maybe it did get entered in the wrong pet.
Right.
And I've definitely seen
that. Yeah, that's happened too.
Because it's alphabetical or something, or numeric, and you click the wrong one. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah, because the only request that I saw was for the report, and that's why I asked again when the necropsy report was sent, and that was within the time frame of when the owner had asked for it. So, but I couldn't find in the medical records where those were sent. But to your point, they could have been put in the other pet's medical records that the records were requested. So that one's a hard one because there's nothing in here that shows that it was asked and not done. But after discussion, so I still would lean towards agreeing with the investigative committee's recommendation with the 32-22-32-11 professional conduct, gross negligence, no intubation. I guess I can let the IV catheter go, but the intubation I feel is a big piece given that we have a bradycephalic pet.
Should we adjust that it wasn't general anesthesia, that it was sedation? Just because I feel there's a difference if it's inhalation versus.
True, but it was given an induction, an anesthetic induction agent.
Mm-hmm. But again, you intubate when you're maintaining on an general anesthesia.
But you can intubate for reasons other than anesthetic in this case. To
you can, improve. It just specifically says general anesthesia.
It says
anesthesia.
It in there, yeah. Perianesthesia and the thing.
And it
yeah.
wasn't general anesthesia. I mean, again, I just yeah. feel like if this is going to get memorialized, it should be.
So then let's proceed with 32-22-32-11, professional conduct, gross negligence, no use of intubation on the pet.
The bradycephalic yeah. pet.
The bradycephalic pet, yes.
Do we have a motion?
That's your motion?
Yes.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Okay, Victoria, let's do roll call.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Craker?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion passes. Okay, do we have to, Mark, do we do anything else at this time? Okay. Okay, so the board has voted to find Dr. Reed in violation, and this concludes the matter today. And Dr. Reed, you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly. And then at next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law, and after doing so, will then discuss and adopt disciplinary action. Thank you, everyone, for being here today.
Thank you.